Hi, this is Jake Mann from the 5 Mile Orchard in Corralitos, California, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Step forward, King. Where is he? Oh, there he is. There he is. And I have my queen. Hail the queen. The king and the queen are important here because we need them to help us in our blessing of the trees. So we know that when we come into the orchard, there's friends in the orchard, and there's sometimes there's some foes, some forces that we need to struggle against, like mites, blight, and other things that are evil forces that repress the apples and hurt our ability to gather and make cider. So as part of the integrated pest management program at this orchard, wassail the trees. And tonight we are going to wassail the trees, but we need to also support the other defenders in the orchard. And one of the defenders in the orchard are robins. And robins are the birds that defend the orchard. My queen, will you hold this precious thing?
Episode 113. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Aria Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we'll be speaking with Jake Mann. He's based in Corralitos, California. That is the Monterey Bay area right along the coast, where they provide apple storage, heirloom apples, and culinary apples to the local economy and greater California and beyond. There's going to be more on that chat in just a moment. Welcome back to Cider Chat if you are a regular listener and have subscribed to the podcast. And if you're new to Cider Chat, well, this is a weekly podcast. It typically goes out on Wednesday. We're up to 113 episodes. And we get to chat with people from around the world, get updates on what's happening out there in the land that I love to call Ciderville, because every one of us has a little spot of Ciderville, even if it's just your food section in your refrigerator that has a couple apples, or out on your table, or maybe you have a painting of an apple. That's your spot of Ciderville, because you have that like little bit of meditation towards apples, palms, and all that good jazz. Speaking of that, when we had the intro by Jake Mann, then we followed into a little bit of wassail. And that's the time of year right about now in the northern hemisphere where folks are out in the orchard. You get to have a good reason to carry a lighted torch, which is, I mean, who doesn't have that on their bucket list, but to carry a lighted torch and go marching up the landscape. It's kind of like days of yore. And sing around the apple tree, and it's all about fertility and the coming season. So that happens this time of year in the northern hemisphere, and in the southern hemisphere, which is right now in the middle of summertime, they do their wassailing, I think it's around the month of July, and I know they're doing that out in Australia. So there's wassails around the world. It's an old pagan tradition that's been brought up through the English countryside, and now people are making it their own all over the land. And I happen to be able to partake in a wassail, as I did last year, at Carr's Cider House, which is based in Hadley, Massachusetts, which is out in my spot of Ciderville. A lot of fun, and the gentleman speaking there was a guy by the name of Al Sachs. And if he sounds familiar, that is because he was on episode number 72, giving a talk on the Lost Apples of the Quabbin, which is a giant landmass area where I live that was flooded back during World War II. So they took out about 5 towns, I think. I might have that right or wrong. And as a result of all that flooding, all these orchards and kind of like spontaneous apple trees that grew here or there were just left and kind of forgotten, kind of like the lost apples of the Quabbin. So you could check out that episode number 72. Now, there's a lot to go into this here episode of Cider Chat, episode number 113. We're going to come in with Jake Mann, who I had the pleasure of walking about in his orchard. We'll get to that in a little bit, but in the meanwhile, I want to bring you up to some news that's happening out there in Ciderville. So fill your glass, and we'll be right back with that. This podcast goes out on January 24th of 2018, and today is the last day that you can register for the Totally Cider Tour to the UK. It takes place April 25th through May 2nd. We reduce the rate dramatically to make it accessible to so many people that I know who are just hunkering for some UK cider, some chit-chatting with some of the most amazing makers out in that area, and drinking whole bunch of cider, don't you know? Anyways, if you want to find out about that, go to totallycider.com. There's a link where you could register. Don't delay. As I say, sign up today for that Totally Cider tour. It's just going to be amazing. While we're on the subject of the UK, I want to mention a Ciderthon that's taking place on April 29th, coming right up. And this is kind of interesting because I was contacted by the group who put this on, and a gal by the name of Nicole, and I wanted to get a little bit more info. What is this? This is a half marathon, and it involves drinking cider. And so my first thought was, wow, that sounds a lot like a beer hash. And if you haven't ever heard of a beer hash, that was something that was started actually by the Brits in Malaysia back in 1932. And these were military guys, and the canteen that they ate at, they called it the Hash House. And they set up this scene where they go running, trying to catch down a rabbit. And along the way, there's different stops that you drink beer, and you have to sing a song, and you get dressed up. And now beer hashes take place all around the world. So if you're into that, I've actually been on one. I wrote an article on it, having taken place in my area. I think I'm going to post that on the Patreon page for the patrons of Cider Chat. It looks like the Ciderthon is going to be a lot like the beer hash, in that you run and you drink. And let me read what she wrote here. So the run is 13 miles long, which is totally doable if you're drinking cider. And at each of the 1.3 mile stops, you get a cider taster of a different kind. Some examples are of Brothers, Wilkin Cider, and Firkin Cider. And more are coming, and they'll be confirmed as they go along. There's a large range that are coming in from across Southwest. And that's the area that we're talking about. This is like Somerset. So part of the rules are that the runners must dress up. See, kind of like the beer hash, which I love. And the better their fancy dress, the more they are in for a chance to win. Holy smokes, get this, a chance to win your body weight in cider, which is a prize for the best outfit or group outfit. Oh, that's just like reason to get dressed up. And it's going to be really playful, obviously. Hopefully, this is going to be a start of a very long thing that will take place not only in Somerset, but in spots around the world. I'd really like to see that, a Ciderthon. How much fun is that? And being a half marathon runner myself back in the day, it was just so much fun to do that. So there's going to be a link in the show notes. You can check it out. It's coming up on April 29th, 2018 in England. And to bring the new listeners up to snuff here, you heard me talk about patrons. There are patrons of this podcast, and those are folks who are listening just like you out there in Ciderville who donate a little bit to keep this chat on the air and help me with a bit of the production of it, because it does take a lot of time. It's actually kind of like creating cider. There's a whole discovery issue that cider and podcasting have to kind of wrestle with all the time. Like, what is cider? Is it hard cider? Is it cedar? You know, what is it? apple juice, I don't know. And the same thing with podcasts, you know, how can I get to that podcast? Especially sometimes the discoverability of a cider podcast. So what I did was set up a page at a website called Patreon, which helps content providers like myself provide a platform for people who appreciate the work that I do on Cider Chat and help support it. And there are some commercial makers who have joined the Cider Going Up campaign because I have a certain room for that on the Patreon site. And that is Current Cider of Pennsylvania. Also, Big Fish Cider Company, and FYI, Kurt Billingsley, who is the owner cider maker of Big Fish Cider Company, he's going to be on the podcast because I'm going to meet him next week for the first time at CiderCon, and I cannot wait. I'm going to probably just, you know, hunt him down with a microphone at some point. No, actually, we have time scheduled, so I'm really excited about that. And there's also Rembourne Cider Company in Luxembourg, the country of Luxembourg, and there they gather local apples, and they get peri pears, and they make cider and peri. They have a barrel aging program, and we're going to be recording a more full-length chat with Rembourne Cider Company. So that's cool. But there's also, you know, cideries like Big Apple Hard Cider, Daniel von Schreiner, that she was on episode 35, Oliver Cider and Peri, that is Tom Oliver's cidery out in Herefordshire. He was on episode 29 and more recent episode 2. There's Santa Cruz Cider Company. I had Nicole Todd on. She was on episode 60. She'll also be at CiderCon. Ethic Cider, which is up in the Sonoma area, Petaluma, California. They're doing some really amazing stuff. They just got a Good Food Award for their cider, as did Big Fish Cider Company. There's also Chuck Shelton. He is part of the Shelton family who owns Albemarle Cider Works in Virginia. And Alan Shapiro, who puts on the Cider Summit all over the Northwest and Midwest. And the next one coming up is in February in Chicago, the Chicago Cider Summit. He was on episode 35. So there's some folks who either are part of the Cider Going campaign as a commercial cidery, or they just make out a flat donation, which super duper helps. Just Google Cider Chat Patreon. That's spelled Patreon.
You gotta grab that luchi. You gotta bust that thang. Get your kicks on the street. Gotta kick back, step back. Oh, you got to skeet. It's a rat-a-tat-a-rat-a-tat-a-rat-a-tat-a-bala. Rat-a-tat-a-rat-a-tat-a-rat-a-tat-a-holla. I don't wanna be pushed like I do the push. When it comes to the cheddar, keep it under the cushion. I don't wanna be ganked like I do the gank. When it comes to the cake, be me a thank. I don't wanna be pushed like I do the push. When it comes to the cheddar, keep it under the cushion. I don't wanna be ganked like I do the gank. When it comes to the cake, be me a thank.
It's time now to head to our main chat with Jake Mann of 5 Mile Orchard in Corralitos, California. And this location, to give you a little bit of background, I went to when I was out that way in November visiting family, and I recorded a number of chats. So you can listen to the episode with Robbie Honda. That was episode 103, because you'll hear Robbie in the beginning of this conversation with Jake, because he was hanging out there when I arrived at 5 Mile Orchard. You can also listen to the episode with Tracy and Claudia, who are the owners of Cider Junction in San Jose. That's right by the San Jose airport. So if you're flying into California, listen to episode 107. I also spoke to Katie and Eric Ryder of Ryder Ranch, and they have Ryder Ranch Cider. Amazing cider. Did a fun episode with them. That was just a couple ago, which was episode number 110. And it was Eric who said, you know, have you talked to Jake yet? And I said, no. So he sent me the contact because I didn't really know who was this guy on Instagram going by the 5 Mile Orchard. I didn't really know, but I really enjoyed his photos. And I thought, you know, oh, who is this dude? So I contacted him. I arrived. I'm driving down the road. You're going to hear some of that background. I got to visit this giant apple storage facility that is multi-generational, passed down through the family. So we're going to talk about that history, about this area of California, what's going on with apples. It's very intriguing. And Jake's passion for the trees and really resurrecting the energy around apple and making cider. So let's you and I grab a glass and join this chat with a little bit of Rob Bihanda of Tanuki Cider Company, and then straight in with Jake Mann, based in Corralitos, California, the great-great-grandson of Sam L. Mann and Company. Sounds like your family has quite a bit of history here.
Yeah, we've been doing this for a few generations. So.
You have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some sort of apple article every fall that some local publication does.
And then, right.
It's as someone who's in the apple industry, it's kind of sad that it's usually framed in the sense of like there used to be this great apple industry,
totally.
And now it's all you
this
know berries and raspberries, and you're like, I'm still working on apples every day. Like there's a lot of people who are, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at you know a satellite photo of the county, it doesn't look like there's a lot of acres of apples. But then you know you and I were talking about how much fruit comes in even just to our little cold storage,
too.
You know, and like Martinelli's produces juice for around the world. So
exactly.
There's a lot of fruit still grown here and trucked in from other areas
right.
as well. So it's still a, yeah.
So what is the acreage of apples in just, and when I say the county, is,
yeah.
or does it cross counties here? Or is
there's
it
some grown out in San Juan Bautista area as well.
Right.
There's quite a few
right.
acres out there. And there's also fruit pulled in from the Central Valley, Stockton, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of fruit around there.
Mm-hmm.
But and I don't know the acreage in Santa Cruz
no
County.
Idea.
No,
no idea.
What's in production.
But it's pretty big.
Yeah.
I mean, not
yeah.
as big as it was.
No, in my lifetime, I've seen plenty of orchards pushed out and put in with hoop houses, berries and stuff. And it's just
berries or grapevines, I was wondering, because I felt like I was seeing a lot of grapevines around here.
It's
know?
More berries for
so
some reason.
Oh, those are berries.
Yeah,
then,
like Sonoma County.
Oh, okay.
Sonoma County gets a lot more orchards pushed out for wine, and down here it seems to be orchards pushed out for blackberries. Yeah, La Mora.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, just
yeah.
to have them in those little tiny like plastic containers for breakfast. I mean,
yeah.
Driscoll's
yeah.
right
is responsible for like 80% of
yeah.
some or some crazy in the
yeah.
country.
Yeah.
And they're based in Watsonville.
Yeah.
Wow.
They're out on the other side of town.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they come up with new varieties every year and
I mean,
license the plants to grow.
All those
yeah.
berries that they're having at the Continental Breakfast on the East Coast right now
yep.
are from
this region.
Yeah.
This region.
Yeah.
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 Guaranteed.
Now, I know Imperial Valley very well because my parents lived down in that region.
Uh-huh.
It was about 70 miles south of Palm Springs,
uh-huh.
which is known as a huge produce production region.
Yeah, my grandfather used to work down there.
Okay.
Yeah, El
Centro. Yeah, yeah right, El
yeah.
Centro.
Yeah.
yeah. But Watsonville, you know, my brother has a kayak shop down in Moss Landing,
oh,
right?
Nice.
Kayak Connection
oh,
and up in
right.
Santa Cruz.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a whole, you know, drive down where you're seeing acres and acres of crops being grown.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I was primarily just doing that drive. I never really saw apple orchards until I pulled off on Freedom Boulevard.
There's nothing out on the freeway.
Nothing out on the freeway.
Yeah. And
so
it starts right here
that.
When you come down Freedom Boulevard.
Yeah.
Which is that's the old route, right?
Yeah.
This was on the main highway between Watsonville and Santa Cruz way back in the day. This is the 5 Mile House up here on the corner. It's part of where we get our name from, the 5 Mile Orchard.
Yeah, that's across the street from the cafe and
exactly.
across from Aladdin, right,
Aladdin
that little
Street,
corner.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So that
yeah.
was 5 miles from downtown Watsonville. There was a gas station there. There's another roadhouse up the way called the 7 Mile House, which is just a residence now. But so this is the old stage route. And I guess Spanish explorers walked through here back in the day.
Yeah, of course.
I met a guy who was writing a book last year, and he was walking along the road retracing the
their route. He had a camp at the lagoon over here where the Spanish explorer camp had.
Wow.
Anyways, this is the first orchards you see when you come down this way.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, and there's also, I've ridden my bike from San Francisco before, and as you come into Corralitos, you sort of pop out of the redwoods and out of the canyons, and then it's apples right away. That's the first crop you see.
Mm.
And there's different corners, you know, driving up to Corralitos from here, you saw some of that. And,
yeah.
You know, there's different corners around the valley where it's still largely apples, but it's a lot more berries now.
Right.
So, and there's only... I think there's two U-pick operations around here, which mm-hmm. I know on the East Coast is a bigger form of apple tourism. People leave New York City, they take the train to upstate, mm-hmm. and they go pick apples, and mm-hmm. that's a thing that they do. And like our friends at the Gizditch Ranch do a pretty good operation there with U-pick and school tours and lots more like sort of mm-hmm. apple-based tourism mm-hmm. in a classic way, I think. So,
It must be absolutely beautiful during apple blossom. Here.
It is.
What would be the time of year that would happen for you in California? Relative.
Which decade?
Relative.
It's changing.
Right now, I know. Right?
This year, our full bloom was late March. Early April.
Okay.
Used to be more early April, mid-April. Last year, it was, I think, we started on March 5th or something.
Wow,
we had a really,
really
warm
early.
Before it was in February.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was a later bloom in like mm-hmm. June.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
We had two.
Before the rain.
So two blooms.
It was kind of weird. It was really drug out. That was a.
Wow.
No chilling. And so the trees just sort of like kind of lazily woke up and bloomed across the whole thing. If you get sufficient chilling hours, not a problem on the East Coast. If you don't get enough chilling hours, then the tree just sort of like doesn't wake up at
right.
the same time, and you get this long bloom and different sized fruit at different ripenesses. This year we had a beautiful bloom, might have been bigger than last year's, but it rained the whole time, and so a lot of the fruit didn't pollinate. The bees were not working.
Oh, geez.
And we got a lot of scab this year because there was so much moisture during the that early part of the fruit.
Wow.
There's scab all over everything.
Now for cider makers, scab doesn't really matter at all. You know?
Not terribly. It affects the fruit size a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it was Neil Worley I heard say that you might actually pick up some other yeasts off the scab that are beneficial for if you're doing a wild ferment. But here, waltz over. You can look at this.
Yeah. So nice to meet you.
Are you heading out, Robbie?
Yeah, I gotta go.
So
really
good.
Appreciate
yeah.
it. Yeah, it's great.
Have a good trip down to Monterey.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
thanks.
So maybe see you in the end of January.
Yeah.
In
maybe.
Baltimore. Fingers crossed.
I'm like 50-50.
Good. Right. It's
maybe
worth your time.
Just to catch you up with what was going on there, Robbie Honda was heading down to Monterey to do a cider delivery, and as we were saying goodbye, I was kind of encouraging him to definitely go to CiderCon, and it turns out that Robbie will be there, as will Jake Mann. So California in the house, along with a bunch of other California makers, and I just heard that Nicole Todd will be at CiderCon too. She's going to be helping out with some pouring. So these are nice folks to meet, greet, and welcome to your spot of Ciderville if you're from the East Coast. I hope you get to enjoy a little chat with them. All right, next, Jake and I are standing over the giant bin of apples and talking about the varieties that they have there as he starts cutting into some Newtown pippins. Right now, we're looking at what kind of apple?
That's a Newtown pippin.
Newtown pippin, which is
the signature apple of the Pajaro Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And these are, you know, pretty good-sized pippins, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we like
a little bit of russeting
bigger.
On it
yeah.
there.
Yeah. So the russeting happens here, and people say it's somewhat specific to the Pajaro Valley Newtown pippin. If you grow these in Hood River, you don't get the russeting.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know why.
Oh, look at that.
But,
yeah. Beautiful. Yeah, wow,
try.
Yeah.
Let's see how these taste. I don't know.
Really sweet, tart. Delicious.
Oh.
Now, you being a multi-generational orchardist, when you bite into that, do you notice, what are you noticing?
Well, I know that these were picked a little ahead of ripe, and then we picked them for appearance, and so they're not as deeply sweet and rich as some of the stuff that we saved later that went to our cider makers,
mm-hmm.
where we're able to strategize with our picking crew to be like,
we're going to save that and pick that as late as possible.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a lot of acres right now. If we only had 5 acres of Newtown pippins, it would be very hard to save them to be extremely ripe because you'd be watching fruit drop.
Right.
When we've got a crew working and there's a lot of acres to pick, some of the pippins just happen to get picked later, which is great for cider makers, for us, for having super ripe fruit. So this was picked a little early. It's been in storage. It's been ripening out here in the shed. So it's good. We've got some deeper flavors ones. Yeah. Maybe we can grab some inside.
When your cider makers that are coming here, like Robbie and Eric,
mm-hmm.
Who else are you providing?
A few people. Santa Cruz Ciders bought some fruit from us this year.
Mm-hmm.
I was excited to work with Lassen Cider this year up in Chico.
Mm.
He does wild ferment in oak with no sulfites, and it's just like as, you know, sort of as plain as you could be, and it makes a delicious cider. So
yeah,
I'm really happy that
I haven't spoken to Lassen yet.
Mm-hmm. Ben Nielsen.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's a few other small ciders we've sold to. So,
and
it's
any,
nice we're expanding this year.
Is it? Do you have, I don't know, novice cider makers or folks like me who are non-commercial who have been like making it in their backyard for whatever amount of time?
I want to get more of those, and that's why I have that little note on my roadside stand that if people are curious about where to get boxes or a bin, mm-hmm. if they want to do some projects, I'd be happy to work with them. And as I'm trying to graft and plant more cider varieties as well, and I'd love to be able to offer a mix at some point for people where it's like, you know,
mm-hmm.
buy 10 cases of pippin and, you know, a case of foxwhelp
another
case of crabs or whatever, you know, and sort of give people a reasonable blend would be great. I don't have that quantity of fruit of the specialty stuff right now.
Right.
That said, Newtown pippin makes a great single varietal.
It does, absolutely. Because they just had that tasting and mm-hmm. Eric sent his to New York City. So mm-hmm. excited about that.
We had fruit in two of those ciders.
Really?
Which I was really proud of when I saw that on the images. And,
wow.
You know, it's like, Mama, our fruit's going to New York City.
Oh,
you know, it kind of feels like that.
You have to feel good about that. After so many years, you know, cider is really that friend that showed up at the door and is really helping orchards around the world.
Yeah.
Not just the U.S., around the world, even in Normandy.
Yeah.
Where there is a push for development, and you would think that there's not a problem for pears or apple trees, because of our affection towards it and what you would think they would love.
Yeah.
You have somebody like Eric Bordelais kind of lamenting that, my God, you know, they're going to take down these trees, maybe.
Right.
So it's not just here. So I don't know if that makes you feel better. But
no, it does.
It's good to know that.
It would be silly to be growing apples these days and not thinking about mm-hmm. cider as part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're in a position here to, you know, we've got folks who are interested. We've got cider makers who want to work with this fruit. We've got a great fruit.
We've got
the potential to.
Delicious.
It's a good place to start.
Now, you mentioned crabs. I was wondering what kind of crabs you are growing.
Let's see. My favorite ones are two that I found poking around in the summer and the fall that are escaped rootstock. So I don't know what they are.
Mm.
But I've propagated
them. Escaped rootstock.
So this is where you've got an old tree where the graft died.
Okay.
I think it was a red... The first one I found, I was standing at my sister's ranch up in Corlitos. And I looked over and I saw these little ping pong ball sized, pale yellow to white almost, round fruit. And I walked over and tried one, and it tasted like a sweet tart candy, totally crazy, you know, puckering,
mm-hmm.
nutty.
Mm-hmm.
And so I noted that, and the next winter came back and grabbed some signwood off of it and grafted it onto some things at my parents' orchard. So I'm trying to keep a library of stuff that's collected.
Great, wow.
And see what does well. You know, sometimes things, mm-hmm. you get some signwood from a grower and mm-hmm. it doesn't really take off, and other ones do really good. So yeah, that one I kept, and that's growing well. And then I found another one at this ranch across the road here that I take care of. Again, same situation where the graft had died off, and it made a medium-sized red with yellow on top, russeted, delicious crab apple. And I grafted that this year, and it just took off. It's really precocious, and I think that's got good potential to be sort of a
a nice local.
But you know, nurseryman somewhere picked it as a decent. It's not an unknown. It's not a wild seedling type thing. It's a known. I just need to find out what nursery it came from. So, yeah. But those are funny discoveries, and it's neat to collect them and keep them and propagate them.
Mm-hmm.
What other crabs do we have? The first one that we had around was a Whitney crab, which is just a common pollinator. It's available in any large nurseries.
So catalog. People put that on in their lawn for ornamentals?
They have it here for pollinizers.
Pollinizers,
yeah.
Okay.
Although here I've seen, it seems more the tradition is to use another variety that blooms at the same time. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the Red Delicious orchards that we take care of have Granny Smiths either interplanted or they graft on one branch of Granny Smith.
Mm-hmm. How does that work? You have the crabapple as a pollinator.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't quite get that.
They bloom at the same time.
They bloom at the same time.
And encourage the bees to be moving different pollen across. That helps.
I see. Pollinize.
And I think I'm learning more about this, but there's some varieties that don't pollinate. They're not self-pollinating. Mutsu.
Mutsu doesn't self-pollinate.
No, you need a pippin or something nearby that blooms at the same time to
wow, that's something that people don't think about when they're planting an orchard now. And there's so many people like, I'm going to plant an orchard, grab a tree and pop it in.
Right.
But you really want to have some cross pollinators, a crab or...
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you need...
Well, our Fuji orchards have galas as the pollinators.
Okay.
And that's funny. Galas are ready around Labor Day, and we don't pick the Fujis until Halloween. But they're blooming at the same time.
Blooming at the same time, but picking different.
Yeah, so you need... Huh. You know, it helps if you're thinking about planting an orchard, you need to talk to some experts. You know, my dad's a orchard consultant, and my parents sell fruit trees, and he's happy to go out and talk to people and loves it, you know.
Good.
And really
good.
Has a lot of knowledge about what works together.
Right. So. What's your dad's first name?
He goes by Bud.
Bud?
But Sam Elman is okay. Sam Elman Jr. is my dad, yeah.
So this is just going a little bit of your history,
uh-huh.
And I was kind of doing a little bit of research here.
Okay.
Like 1870s,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That would it be your great-great-grandfather?
I believe so, yes. Came out from Missouri.
And his name wasn't Sam.
He may have been Old Sam Man, may have been Christopher Man. There's a lot of Chris's and Sam's up the line.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And then, but the orchard production and apple picking was named after a grandson, Sam. Is that right?
Yeah. My grandfather is Sam, and his brother Elwin started this operation here.
All right.
In the...
So your father is Sam Jr.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Must be really something to have that kind of heritage. What were some of the stories that you heard about, you know, in the apple days? Were they making cider? I understand that Martinelli's made, you know, they were fermenting apple juice. They were making sparkling cider.
They probably did. I don't know when they stopped making fermented beverages. I mean, stories around here I heard are that guys that worked in this facility were fermenting stuff for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they would throw raisins in. Sometimes they would forget to take the lid off, and then you would have exploded bottles in the back. These kind of stories. But
right.
I don't think they ever made a production version of fermented cider here. There was juice and sauce made in this building a long time ago.
Juice and sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. A big
and,
apple festival, though, right?
In Watsonville?
In Watsonville, yeah.
Yeah. An apple show where apples grow, I think, was the byline.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can see a lot of posters around. There's an Ag History Project here in Watsonville. I'm not sure if they're open today, but that's worth checking out. They have a lot of old labels. They've got a huge cart of old Pajaro Valley labels. Martinelli has a small museum in their company store. Shows some of their old products that they made and lots of old photos.
Great, yeah.
But, yeah, this has been going. I mean, this facility was, you know, Mann's used to do, I think, 3,000 acres of apples themselves, and there was a lot more fresh market. You know, this packing line that's not running anymore was, you know, 15 people running it and wow. Shipping cases of fruit all over the nation.
So what has changed here then? Because, you know, and just to give Ciderville a little image of what we're in, we're in a pretty big building here. I'm going to say it's like 100 feet in one direction, maybe 100 feet square, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Peaked roof with wooden crossing going, you know, like what you see in a stick frame, but only bigger timber with big giant lights that probably made this building glow during mm-hmm. the heavy packing days. Mm-hmm. And as we walked in through a big sliding green door, mm-hmm. there was these bins of the Newtown Pippins here and these large wooden apple crates.
Mm-hmm. You know, with bins, yeah.
Bins with man, spray painted down on the side, or stenciled, I would say. Mm-hmm. A little side office that I was talking with Robbie in earlier. And then across the room, I'm seeing this whole, that's a packing line there. It's this long mm-hmm. vertical conveyor belt, really, mm-hmm. right? So when was, you're saying that's not being used anymore because?
No, I'm not sure when that was downsized. My father's side of the family wasn't taking care of this facility in the 70s and 80s. And so I'm not sure when this went out of use, but I do know that sort of the apple market for Fresh Market was eclipsed by Washington and Oregon at some point. They got better at growing that market fruit mm-hmm. in those tighter, regular rows. It was much different, you know, when this facility was first run. They weren't using bins. They were using bushels was the unit. And so they were picked into that, and they were stored. They stacked them, I don't know how many high, in the cold storage in just these 40-pound bushel boxes. And then they would bring those out. It was all on hand trucks, and they would sort them on the lines then. And so there was a shift in the, I believe, late 50s to bins.
Late as 50s, the unit. Only and, as the late 50s.
You know, and these larger ones here hold 30 bushels.
30 bushels.
Yeah, and these are about 24 bushels. It's about a bushel per inch of depth in a bin.
Mm-hmm. This is a plastic bin that we're standing in front of. Yep.
These are more durable and... But we still use plenty of wood bins, too.
Yeah, well, it's certainly got a lot of character to it. You know, you could feel that.
And they're repairable.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You also have a whole bunch of wood all stickered over there.
Yeah, that's a grower that we work with needed some space to... They've got a side project going here. That's a giant walnut tree that was cut up. And,
I was wondering, wow.
And what do they call it? Flitch cut, when they split it like that for drying. So that's been here about a year.
Beautiful slabs, probably like 3-inch thick slabs
and
walnut trees.
Yeah, Noah's drying that, and he's, you know, just recognized that it's good wood and that he should probably keep it.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what he's got planned for it. It's interesting in here. There's people that come in and out, and some other woodworkers have seen it and taken interest. And so it's sort of like a casual showroom here. We've got this wood, and people have asked about it. So we, you know, maybe by storing it here... The guy who cut it will be able to sell a couple pieces and earn some extra dough.
Yeah, that was a big tree, no doubt. And walnut trees grow all over this region, too.
Yeah,
it's really well known for walnut trees.
Yeah.
Right on. So you have cold storage here.
Yeah.
Is this considered the cold storage?
No, we can go take a look at it.
Yeah,
let's
go look at that.
Here. We just finished picking last week, and so the cold storage is... pretty full. I could turn a forklift around in one section, but I didn't know.
Now, how is this room set up? Is it, are you sucking out the oxygen and so that you could kind of hold it for months and months, or is
it cold atmosphere where they actually seal it?
Okay.
This is cold. This is just cold storage, so it's just chilled to mid 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep apples in here. We started loading this in August, late August, and we will keep these apples in until late February, mid-March.
Goodness, here we go. And we're going to go through a big plastic kind of vertical slats here.
Yeah.
Oh, what a smell. Wow. Very cool. That's the photo.
So,
right on.
Yeah, as harvest starts, I really become a cold storage operator mostly.
My dad's
driving trucks with any fruit that goes to town for Martinelli. We're bringing this in here on trucks and with tractors and such. And again, like I said, we store for other growers as well. So they're bringing fruit by. And I've become sort of a cold storage warehouseman throughout the fall. It's a lot of time on a forklift. And it's interesting when you start filling these rooms, you have to strategize. Yeah, let's walk down there. You're starting with a blank slate and you have to strategize where to put the fruit. Based on, you know, the quality of the fruit, what varieties store longer, and those might go further back in. When we start in January, you know, we'll just kind of chip away at it.
Yes, you will. And then what? About what month will this be emptied?
Last year we finished at the end of February. We'll see this year. We may try to go into March. Your apples get a better price if you have them later in the season.
Sure.
So that's what they use. I still need to press my own cider. I haven't got to it yet because I'm so busy, and now it's time to do it. And so I'm hoping that some of the crabs that I harvested, and you know, I have a few branches of Kingston Black and such, and I'm hoping that those are still decent enough to use when I press. But I'll probably also make just a Newtown batch as well.
When did you graft the Kingston?
I started those in 14, and I'm getting, you know, a few branches. And then we took some of that this year and top worked it to more branches. So.
Yeah,
we'll take a look at those. We're going to go to another ranch.
Awesome. So I'm standing out on this big loading dock here. We just walked out of the cold storage area. The front room is where we were originally standing in, where they did all the packing. And then right outside this, I'm going to take a photo from the docking area, is this orchard. As far as I can see, all the way back here to that tree line. Quite a few apple trees. And what would all these ages be on these trees here?
These are probably 25 to 30 year old Red Delicious that we're looking at here. They didn't do great this year. Last year they was fantastic. Again, I wouldn't select to plant Red Delicious and grow them right now, but this orchard has the trees in place. And I was saying earlier about the way that the apple industry works here. We're growing mostly for juice, and so if you have a productive orchard of Red Delicious, you may not take the time and money to rip it out and put something else in.
Yeah.
You know, it's productive.
Yeah.
I top worked some Red Delicious here to Black Twig, which I've got some cider makers who are interested in using that. Mm-hmm. It was also an experiment to see if we could top work Red Delicious into something more useful. I'd be glad to get my hands on some cider fruit and, you know, some English varieties and stick them on there this winter. So.
Yeah. Yeah, is it? How's it looking so far? You've started to graft?
We should go back and take a look at it.
Let's see,
there's two. I want to show you some of this ranch, and then we can drive right up the road to my parents' place.
Wonderful.
And show you some of the trees that Eric's been using for his pip and cider.
Let's do it.
Okay,
let's
cool.
do it.
Next up, Jake and I are going to be driving around the orchard. And just to give you a feel for it, it's right next to the apple storage facility. And it's very arid. It was a bright, sunny day, not a cloud in the sky. Not a negative word was heard from the people passing by. Yes, it was a sunny day. And that was in November. Very arid. They do some irrigation, some dry farming, and you're going to get a sense of his orchard care, which it was just so encouraging, really inspiring guy. So let's now take a ride with Jake Mann of a 5 Mile Orchard out in Monterey Bay, flatside to Watsonville in Corralitos, California. We're driving in the back right now behind the what do you call that building?
Packing shed, cold storage building. Yeah.
Okay.
El empaque, dicen en español.
Okay, yeah.
Empaque for packing shed,
Yeah. Whole bunch of those big boxes, the wooden bins.
Yeah.
So how they do in the sun, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's good. They weather and dry out. You want to use them every year or move them around. So last year we worked with the left side of this pile, and this year we worked from the right side so that we're getting a rotation going every year.
Yeah. Kind of classic scene in California. There's a couple boats tucked in the back there, storing, and wood up front.
Yeah.
Space.
This is a section of John and Gold's that did really good for our market fruit this year. Beautiful big fruit. Santa Cruz Cider's working with some of this for fermentation. They're a delicious, sort of acidic and sweet variety. Over here on the right, I'm doing a little bit of a... I'm trying to make this ditch a bit more interesting. I'm planted some willow trees in here, and I'm hoping that they grow up and they'll shade out the weeds in the ditch, and they make, you know, habitat for birds, and they create a bit of a windbreak, and visually I think they look really nice, you know, to have creeks or ditches that sort of have some a little bit more plant material.
That's brilliant. Brilliant. It'll give a little bit of shade too.
Yeah,
because you're doing dry orcharding.
We do irrigate. Yeah.
You do?
No,
okay.
We do irrigate once a year in July, and we have to move pipes in. This isn't drip irrigate setup, so we move What creature do we have there?
That looks like a cat.
Okay.
It's a cat. Yeah. What kind of creatures do you get here?
Well, we have ground squirrels and we have jackrabbits. Mm. Jackrabbits are funny. There's coyotes once in a while around. I've had them follow me while I'm working, like a couple rows over, sort of tracking. So these are Newtown pippins on the right. They're interplanted, so the big rows are Newtown pippin that are about 75 years old, and these are mutsu, which are about, you know, 5 to 10 interplanted.
What is the pink marks around the trees?
What's the pink marks is this section we are transitioning to organic.
Beautiful trees.
And so we put the pink paint on them to denote if you're riding around with a spray rig or an herbicide rig or anything that's not organic, you want to make sure you don't drive in here with it. So it's just a visual cue for now. Took on an organic orchard from our neighbors just over here this year, and I said, you know, let's try converting and see how it goes. There's enough materials now, and the technology is developing enough that it's getting easier to farm organically, we think. And my dad's willing to as our main sort of advisor on how we take care of these trees, he's willing to take a chance now and see how it goes. And it's so far it's turning out good, and more people are asking for it, of course. I mean, it's a trend in the world, and if it you know, if our production is good and it's the fruit's turning out well, it's probably a good idea to do it.
Is this all like dwarf trees? Are these
These are semi dwarf. They're probably M111. These red delicious. These are Fujis on the left here, and red delicious on back here. These large ones are standard rootstock. I mean, planted in the 40s. I don't think they had semi dwarf varieties at that point. The mutsus that are interplanted in there are, I don't know what rootstock they're on, but they're a semi dwarf. We use a lot of B118, which is like hardly dwarfed. You could still grow a pretty large tree out of that.
It looks like they're getting bigger as I look down the lane there. Is that true?
We'll drive down there and check it out.
Not an optical illusion.
I want to show you these graphs that we did.
Oh, wonderful. Graphs. Love it.
The full roots.
Look at the view, too, of the mountains up there. Yeah, wow.
That's up Eureka Canyon. You're looking at a little bit of evidence of a fire from 2008.
That dark area, that's not a cloud.
That is a cloud, yes. Oh, no, but the sort of bald hillside above that is from 2008, the Loma Prieta fire. Oh. That's Loma Prieta peak there with the antennas on top.
Yep, yep.
So I'm showing you this top work section we did last year.
Look at that.
I'm looking forward to pruning this because the grafts have really taken off now.
Oh my goodness, look at that.
And we can then go ahead and probably start cutting the nurse branches, or they call them the sap pillars.
Wow, look at that.
And I think this is also characteristic of black twig, which is a really vigorous grower. I mean, this is, you're looking at...
Look at those guys, yeah.
5 feet of growth this year. This is the second season they've grown. They did this much growth last year. I'm going to have lots of signwood of this variety to go ahead and probably keep moving through.
Now, what are you grafting that onto?
That's a red delicious.
That is red delicious.
Yeah.
But right next door to that, that's not red
that's
delicious.
A, I believe this looks like a mutu truly missed. It didn't get picked.
Huh.
Couldn't get to everything. And sometimes these anomalies that are in different parts of the orchard, you forget.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. And, yeah, it's a lot to keep on.
Yeah. So...
And the soil here is so black and chunky. What is that? You know,
I believe it's a Pajaro Valley loam.
Okay.
Depending on the different ranches, even though they're all the same level, some of them can be. I got a tractor stuck in this mud last year in 16, and it was like lead peanut butter. It was horrible. You know, it was a really
good... I could imagine. Feels like it's just kind of walking on it, too.
There's but, you know, generally, I mean, I've also turned shovels full of dirt, and it's like beautiful coffee grounds, you know. So it just depends on the area. And we're close to the creek, so I'm assuming that these are, you know, soils that have spilled over from creek flow, which usually you get the thicker, bigger particles closer to the creek. You know, the further you are away, the more sort of clay you get.
Mm-hmm.
We have another ranch that we take care of on up on top of the hill, and that's a whole different kind of clay. It's like
marshmallow cream spongy, and it won't dry out for 2 weeks after a rain, and you have to be really careful about when you go up there to mow, because you can get a tractor stuck. I got my car stuck up there just doing a ranch check one day. And that was 2 days after getting the tractor stuck here. So,
life of an orchardist.
I, you know, my dad's always told me, he's like, don't go in there and get it stuck. Just, it's not worth it. And, you know, you're always in a hurry in the spring. You want to get some work done while you got some sunshine. And I finally got a tractor stuck, and he kind of laughed at me because I finally did it. And I realized that it's not just that it's sticking, it's that you had so many other things you wanted to do with your day, and now you're stuck spending hours and hours and hours trying to get a tractor out. It's a huge waste of time. And so that's the best reason to just hold back and wait and don't try.
Sometimes you have to do that to learn, right?
Yeah, that's all right. So it's... Yeah. It's funny, you know, people tell you these things over and over, and then you finally learn.
Well, especially parents, sometimes you really have to do it. So I'm seeing a lot of grafting going on.
Yeah, we did about 44 trees here or something.
Yeah.
And you can see the amount of growth and suckering that happens. This is the branch, the nurse branch that we left over. It's just crazy and lots of growth. They require a lot of maintenance after you do this. You've cut off most of the limbs of this tree when it's dormant, and when it wakes up again, it's got to have somewhere for all that energy to grow, to go. So it, you know, it suckers quite a bit. It requires a lot of cleanup and maintenance. So I'm really looking forward to the grafting this year, because I think we can start to shape these into real trees. As harvest approaches, labor becomes a huge issue here. And Watsonville, we were talking earlier about the blackberries, and there's strawberries here, and there's some wine industry, but you could see the hoop houses over there for a blackberry field on the other side of the creek. There's no longer really a migrant workforce as there used to be, where folks would go back to Mexico in the year. It's too hard to get back and forth. And there's enough agricultural work that people live here year round and work. And but one of the things that's changing, if you've got an old standard orchard like this, it's harder to get pickers because it's much harder work.
Yeah.
Every time you have to move that bigger ladder, you know, these trees are less productive than a vigorous, young, dense
and you're
orchard.
Using wooden or ladder?
Aluminum.
No, aluminum, okay.
Yeah, but they're 14-foot ladders. And the trees are pruned such that you can put a ladder into them. But still, you get up there, and if it's a year, this was kind of a sparse year. We had to actually, like, you know, raise our price per bin because the pickers weren't able to, you know.
And that's how they're paid, per bin.
Per bin,
right?
Yeah. Wow. And that has to be better than, you know, minimum wage. Because they're hustling, you know, it's contract work. So.
All the more important to get more value added to that apple.
For sure, for
such
sure.
Such as cider, you know.
So if you know, it's easier. If you've got a nice, tight orchard of Fujis, you're not going to have a problem getting pickers. There's some folks who have only standard rootstock Newtown Pippin orchards. Still at the old 30 by 30 planting, so it's just these monsters, and those, they have a hard time getting pickers, or they don't get a lot, you know. And so it's
and what year did that kind of change?
It's been
kind of coming on for a little bit.
Yeah, I'm trying to think,
the politics of immigration,
totally. I mean, it's been, you know, it's been tightening up for the last 20 or 30 years. You know, so. But every year there's worry. We're not going to get any pickers, you know.
What's going to happen? I can't imagine. You know, every industry has that worry because they're really dependent upon migrant workers.
Yep.
For apple trees all over the place everything else.
It's true.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, that's really hard work to go up an apple tree, having done just a minimum for my own cider.
Yeah, this is something we did this year. We put up a sign. I got into hand painting. Our sign says "Se necesitan piscadores" for the apples. So, and we put our two foremen's phone numbers on there. So
that
people drive by. And I saw this in Washington.
What does that say?
Sign?
Yeah.
We need pickers are needed.
Pickers are needed.
For the apples.
I see.
And so you put that out on the road, and people cruise around, and they check out your orchards. They're sort of shopping for, you know, where to start.
You gotta work it any way you can.
Yeah. This across the road here is a small orchard I started taking care of about 4 years ago. There's a family here that's used to run a nursery, and there's this little one-acre piece on the road, and it's mostly Newtown pippin. Smaller trees.
Right there.
It's been ignored. The weeds were up in the trees, and I just asked them, can I take care of this and just pick the couple bins of fruit that come off of it?
Nice.
So that we can, just to take care of it. I said, it's almost in my way. It's between, one ranch that we take care of up the road and one down the road. And it's like, it's not hard to pull in with the mower and buzz it.
Your equipment's right here.
Yeah, and we use, instead of, we've replaced a lot of insecticide use with coddling moth pheromones over the years. And it's very easy to apply. You just hang these little pheromone things in the tree, and it wards off, it confuses the coddling moth so they don't mate. That's done really well in there.
That's integrated pest management practice,
And you confuse the moths so they don't meet up and mate. Yeah. And so last year, there are 4 different ciders made with the fruit from that little batch.
No
Tilted
kidding.
Sheds, working with their fruit. Eric Ryder did one. I made 3 gallons. And it turns out David from Agrizic Ferments, associated with Tilted Shed, also made some. So 4 different ciders were made off this little patch of...
that you saved.
I enjoy taking care of it. It's fun.
Gosh.
And it's one of the only... we're doing over 100 acres, and that's one of the only pieces I really get to do the whole thing on. I can prune it. I picked it this year myself.
Oh, my gosh.
I mow it.
Yeah.
All these things. So it's a nice little patch. And it's out by the road. People honk when they go by. It's a chance to be out and kind of...
A little bit of promotion of Apple.
Yep.
What's the buzz going on there?
Yeah.
And they were just leaving it. You found like an orchard next to your own major orchard. That is the beauty of what's happening with cider right now.
Yeah.
So everybody's like waking up and the apples are just sitting idle.
Yeah. And this is also the one... You can see my tag out there for grafting.
Yes, I can. Yeah.
This is where I found one of the crab apples that was, from a dead tree that the rootstock was still going.
Oh, they look so happy.
Just a little bit of pruning and mowing and keeping the coddling moth out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's last year, I don't know how many bins we got out, but the fruit was really nice. I can hand thin the whole thing myself. I like to do that work at the end of the day. I'll sort of go over there for an hour at the end of the afternoon if I've got a little patch of time and prune one or two rows or thin one or two rows or however it's going to happen.
That's awesome.
So
now we're in the middle of...
Yeah, this is the 5 Mile House. It's an old gas station. It was an organic grocery store when I was a kid. It's been a cafe. This was an old roadhouse area. My dad grew up in that house.
That
on the
house
corner.
Right on the corner. Okay. Mm-hmm.
This used to be an orchard that was taken out, 30 years ago, more. So now we're ducking into my parents' ranch now. This is behind the 5 Mile House. You can see there's a lot
the
of work to do
right
with
here.
Weed eating right now.
Yeah.
Malva has taken hold here, so we've got a lot of weed eating to do.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the double rows here, extended. This is one of the original older trees, and so this
lots of apple ladders
are here.
You
can hear chainsaws going. We're cutting.
Are we going to come out this way again?
Yes, we will.
Okay, good. I want to get a photo of that because it's a nice one.
Actually, we could just park here at the barn and walk. It's not that far. Okay. It's much nicer walking than driving.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a windshield farmer, as they say.
Well, when you're kind of like doing it all like you're doing, you gotta...
It's nice to get...
Make it happen.
It's nice to get tree time.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you one thing, Ciderville. Jake Mant is not, by any means, a windshield farmer. I like that term. Anyways, we did get out at that point, and I was taking a lot of photos. We walked around some of the trees that Eric and Katie Ryder are using in their Ryder Ranch cider,
where they make a single variety Newtown Pippin using trees that aren't any younger than 75 years. And that's what Jake does have on his property there. So an amazing man, an amazing family orchard, so much to learn from. And if you want to check it out, you'll find some links to contact Jake in the show notes. I have some pictures if you go to the ciderchat.com website. And you go to this here episode 113. And I'm also going to be working on a little video because I took a lot of photos and just kind of put them in a little snapshot. And I'll be posting that to the Cider Chat YouTube channel. So you could subscribe to all of that. When I come back, I'm going to send you off with a couple tips if you're headed to CiderCon. And I know some of you are, maybe right now, hot diggity Dan, that you could kind of put into your tool bag. And even if you're not headed to CiderCon and you do travel about, I think this tool would be pretty handy dandy for you regardless. Stay tuned. Well, anytime that I fly, the one thing I always make sure that I have is the app for the airline that I'm flying on, and also any hotels. So you want to get the Marriott app, and you also want to get the app for the airline. For instance, I was flying out of San Diego just about a week ago, and right as we were ready to go to the airport, we got the notification, flight canceled. And the great thing about the app is you're able to go onto that app and manage your new destinations, if you will, because you might have to, you know, get jumbled around a little bit as you select a new flight. So that made my life easy because at the same time, just as a backup, we had the airlines on the phone trying to get through to a representative. And that never happened. The whole time we spent rearranging our flight to get home, nobody ever answered. So my key for you, whether you are going to CiderCon or wherever you go, is always get the brand that you are either flying on or staying at, get their app so you can manage it. It is just a good tool to have in your tool bag for that little, you know, when things don't always go so well or as you plan. But I think things went really well this week, so I appreciate your time. Those who are going to CiderCon, don't forget to bring your cider to Adam Levy, the alcohol professor. He's going to be in the vendor section down there at the Marriott in Baltimore. You could submit your ciders to the New York Beer Competition that we hope will eventually become the New York Cider Competition as he gets a record number of ciders going in there. And also to the Berlin competition that he is managing too. So this will save you on some shipping if you do that and bring your ciders to the Baltimore CiderCon event coming up next week. Oh my goodness. Yeah, starting right up. Oh, I got to start packing, getting my act together for all that. And I'll be set up in a little booth somewhere like a fly on the wall kind of too, because I'm hoping to record some presentations. Really excited about that. If I see you at CiderCon, please don't hesitate to say hi. I love it. I love it. So don't hesitate to say hi. Well, maybe we'll take a photo. We could share that with Ciderville. There couldn't be anything better except that is raising a glass with you, which I hope that I could do soon. In the meanwhile, I'm going to be rolling on out of here until that next time we can raise a glass. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.